There, mute the room there. Thank you so much, Joan. Wonderful, wonderful. I try to sleep in on Saturday morning, but I always seem to get up and come in here. So I love to hear it, and I love these incredible, incredible review lessons. I don't think people really get, in fact, I didn't for the first few years, get what the review lesson was all about. And so I kind of skipped it sometimes, but no more. But I have Bruce Rawls, and good morning, Bruce, and good morning, everybody. Welcome to the House of the Rising Sun. And the sun is rising here. How are you doing today, Bruce?
Good, Lynn. Good morning to you and all.
Having a beautiful morning so far here in lovely Pueblo, and I'm assuming you're still in Livermore.
That is correct in the dream vernacular. Yeah, I've been here for a few months, and I thought it'd be kind of interesting. You mentioned the review lessons, and they're wonderful. We could certainly look at that. I've also been looking at the FAQs on the Foundation for A Course in Miracles website, number 1065. I don't know if you got my email, but I thought that would be a really good one to review. It's got a lot of substance in it. Does that sound like a
That sounds like a
good
really good
choice?
thing. Yeah.
Okay,
So
okay.
let me go look for your email. Maybe it went in my spam.
How symbolic, we all have these spam filters in our mind, don't we? It all depends on what we value, what we consider important, what we consider junk. And I was kind of thinking that could be another theme for this, which seems like it fits nicely with this particular FAQ is, the investments that we have. And we don't realize how heavily invested we are in the ego until we really start paying more attention to it and mindfully, lucidly looking at the contents of our dreaming minds and seeing that they're pretty well invested, pretty thoroughly invested
Oh,
in
yeah.
a private, separate self. And that investment is the only investment that doesn't pay off, And I was thinking a few minutes ago, it's like there was a quote somewhere in the course that it's kind of like a, gentle poking fun at our investment in the ego by Jesus of the course. And, that we put our faith and our trust and our hopes and expectations in the one, and we listen for guidance from, the one thing in the whole universe that doesn't know anything, and that's the ego. We made up a mindless self intentionally to hide from a crime that we never committed, which is silly in itself. But then, we're so invested in that thought system, that whole belief about ourselves, and it's just a belief that we've forgotten that we could laugh at that idea. And so the only way to undo that really is to disinvest in ego. That's why I believe Ken Wapnick's, brilliant comment is that it's not the course in, A Course in Miracles is not a course in yes, it's a course in not no. And what a great reminder that all we have to do is really just let go of and release our white knuckle grip on a crazy idea that has never served us. And by looking at how painful and how miserable we are, by using that thought system as our basis for our identity, how poignantly silly and frustrating and ridiculous that is. And we can afford to laugh at ourselves, not the real self that we are, because that's just the one being that we all share, but to laugh at the idea that we could, do the John Wayne, I'll do it myself, kind of idea of I'm going to go off from perfect oneness on my own. And we think we threw it under the bus, and we think we trashed it, and we think we've invested completely in a world and a thought system and a whole package deal. I mean, it's like a deluxe, all-included experience that is not that deluxe when we look at it. It's got some serious flaws in it, like the ego's everything is really nothing, and what we really are is everything. But we've got it so backwards, don't we? I mean, it's amazing. So anyway, I've been kind of rambling a bit. Should we start in with reading the FAQ a bit?
I think that's a great idea.
Are you lined up with that? Okay.
Absolutely. Please.
One more quick announcement before we get started is just a reminder that there's still plenty of enrollments left in the Weekend of Freedom Retreat. And the website for that is WOFR. Oh, well, excuse me, that's the acronym for it. We don't have that website, but the acronym is WOFR, but the website is weekendoffreedomretreat.org or .com, either one works. And there's now, as of last week, I think we have, what, five or six video conversations? Let's see, I think there's... At least five of them, and then the last one I'm going to do for the time being is coming up on Monday with Gary Renard and Cindy Laura Renard. So we've got Maria Felipe, David Hoffmeister, Craig Villarubia, Lori Coburn, Dove Fishman, just a whole bunch of cool folks that you will enjoy, and I'm going to enjoy, and whoever else shows up is going to enjoy, and that's going to be a lot of fun. Anyway, that's June 16th through the 19th in Estes Park, Colorado, and you can find all the details and registration information there. And I highly recommend it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And if you happen to be in Colorado at that time of the year, or happen to live nearby, I think it's going to be a blast. So,
yeah, and Dove just posted that Regina is going to be there as a guest at the retreat. She's not going to be a presenter. So that'll be a really kind of interesting thing to be at a retreat that Regina's not teaching at. And also, you were saying about if you happen to be in Colorado, if you're planning a vacation and you want to bring your family and you want to have a spiritual retreat for yourself, but you want the kids and the rest of the family to have some other kind of fun, this place is so perfect for that because it's a huge ranch up on Estes Park, Colorado. They have horses. They have a big indoor Olympic-sized swimming pool, hot tubs, crafts. There's a place where you can go and make ceramics, make painting, beads, all leather crafts, all kinds of crafts. So there's stuff for the kids. There's all kinds of activities all the time. So, think about, come and bring the family for a vacation. And, you can come and listen to great teachers and join with some people in some fun spiritual roundtables. And the rest of the family can be out hiking and riding horses and swimming and doing all kinds of stuff. So it's really kind of a win-win situation if you look at it that way.
And that's, thank you for bringing all that up, Lynn. And there's a couple of points that tie into things we can use right now, regardless of whether we plan to go to the Weekend of Freedom Retreat in June or not. And that is the whole remembering that including everyone, our family members, the people that we work with, the people that cut us off in traffic or don't, the checkers at the grocery store, the list is endless. Anyone who crosses our path, mentally or physically, and remembering that the projected world is all in the mind, which is what our beloved Blue Book continues to remind us, is an opportunity for us to look at that the idea that we've made up a dream where there seem to be separate and different things, different status between core students and non-core students, between presenters and non-presenters. And when you mentioned Regina being there, not as a presenter, well, we're all going to be presenters there. We're all teachers all the time because we're always sharing one of two thought systems. And I think that's where I really like the emphasis on the roundtable orientation. And I'm particularly looking forward to that because I like the interaction a lot, just like what we're doing right now, you and I, Lynn. I mean, the idea that any two people who recognize that there's got to be a better way, like Helen and Bill did, can come together and change the world, not by making the manifestation different, because that script is already written, but by changing our how we look at it and how we relate to it in our mind. That changes everything. it changes the entire ball game. And I think there's probably places for ball games as part two.
Actually, there is, yes. So.
Yeah.
I think there's right.
Archery and all kinds of.
That's what happens when we start letting go of our belief in our guilt and our responsibility for the, and I'm not saying let go of your responsibility, but the guilt, the blaming yourself for whatever seems to be not perfect in your life, and blaming the rest of the world for being imperfect, it's ridiculous. Because yes, these two puppets that are talking to each other right now we're characters. This is character in character. And, you know, as much as you like to think, well, you know, this is my right mind thinking, well, that right mind is still a character. It's still something that is not the perfect creation that God made, because it has thoughts and ideas and opinions that are mm-hmm. outside of what God would think. So
right.
recognizing that, yeah, that appears to be my situation right now. That appears to be the situation of this being, is that I am here with all these burdens, burdens of guilt. And that's really what it is. It doesn't, you can
exactly.
it's, you know, it's responsibility or my family or what. It's all guilt. I'm doing it all because if
and that's the only burden. That's the only burden. That's the only bad investment that we've made. We've invested in guilt, and everything that's flowed from that is just a tiny mad idea, you know, a reflection of that tiny mad idea, right? So, yeah, pardon the interruption, but I just thought
that's perfect.
Good point you made. Yeah, yeah.
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 Because, yeah, once you recognize that, and it takes some looking and it takes some honesty, but really when you look, and for me anyway, when I look and I'm honest with myself about what I think is happening here versus what is really happening here, then I recognize that I'm off the hook. You know, really, I have done nothing, nor have you, nor has the world, nor has anything or anyone else to cause all these things to go wrong. Really, I'm just walking through a script. And the things that I think are going wrong are
yep.
going perfectly right. That's the way the script is written. There's it's doing
how,
what we told it to do.
Yeah, how could anything that happens in a dream be wrong or right or good or bad or better or worse? I mean, if it's a dream, it's a dream. But that's the last thing our egos want us to look at and to admit and to say, oh yeah, okay, right, sure. But when can I fix this? You know, and to catch yourself doing that again and again and again, that's part of the process. And it takes time, doesn't it, to catch yourself countless times or seemingly countless times and finally start to slow down that immediate knee-jerk reinvestment in a thought system that doesn't serve us and just say, oh, wait a minute, I could see peace instead of this. You know, I'm not ever upset for the reason I think. I'm actually upset because I think that there's something in the world that's going to make me happy, and I've reinvested again. I've looked down my, you know, the course says, you know, you've picked up the sword again without realizing. You look down mentally and see, oh, I picked up that sword of aggression and grievances and anger and fear but you know, we could use the investment metaphor. You know, we've taken out our checkbook again and written out another big check to the ego to say, oh yeah, well, I'm buying what you're saying. but it never pays off. It's just a crappy investment, you know.
Well, exactly.
It's a scam. Don't go there.
and the mechanism that it uses is the very mechanism that it caught you with in the first place.
Exactly.
So it brings you back to it through guilt. That's the only when that little thought comes up in your mind that says, "Oh, but what if?" or did I make a mistake? Or, you know, am I, you really honestly you let it just trap you again, and it brings you back in, and you get involved and invested, and then obviously you recognize, oh, I shouldn't be getting involved and invested. You know, I'm not, you know, not doing what I'm supposed to be doing, and then you're back to the guilt. And so it's just oh my gosh, it just goes on and on and on until you stop that cycle. And the cycle can only be stopped through forgiveness. For exactly. Actually stopping and looking and saying, what I think happened here really didn't happen.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that comes with a lot of practice. And but each time we have that little, even if it's just a momentary glimpse of saying, oh yeah, this is silly, I fell for it again. that little bit of awareness builds. And I think it has two advantages that the Course addresses. One is those holy instants, those little miracle moments where we, you know, forget to judge our brother, where we forget to condemn each other, and are including ourselves, because ourselves, the little s self is part of the other, really. The self we see in the mirror seems to be an other, doesn't it? I mean, but that's the whole point of the ego, is to make otherness a big deal. And whenever we look at that, even momentarily, and just forgive that, it's like, oh, I'm choosing to make a big deal out of nothing again. And those momentary releases bring peace. They bring an easing of the inner tension that we have around the ontological guilt that Ken talks about, which is just a fancy $50 adjective that basically says it's very fundamental and it's at the core of everything that's wrong, and not wrong in the moralistic sense, but just ineffective in the sense of it just doesn't get us what we want, which is the peace that the Course talks about. That's why the organization that published A Course in Miracles is called the Foundation for Inner Peace. It's not about fixing anything in the dream. It's about restoring the peace that's behind that, maladaptive solution to the non-existent problem. And we can do that anytime we take a moment to say, that approach of trying to make the dream work for me isn't working, and I can let go of it. But that's cumulative, too. And that's the secondary benefit, is that it builds over time, and typically, I think what happens is our reaction time becomes decreased, just like any habit, any mental muscle, so to speak, that we're developing. The more we catch ourselves and the more we see that choosing ego's insane thought system doesn't work for us, the quicker we snap out of it. We get out of ego's mesmerizing, hypnotic, seductive, entrancing thought system, and have those lucid awake moments. Even if it's just the dream of being awake, that dream of being awake reminds us, like you're saying, the forgiveness and the Holy Spirit's thought system is part of the dream, but it's the only part that gets us out of the dream ultimately and returns us to what we can't even imagine here, that is wonderful beyond anything we can imagine, because we're so fixated on time. The idea of a oneness joined in one, and as one, I'll say that again, a oneness joined as one and an eternal being, they're just, pleasant words at this point to us for the most part. But we resonate to those because we know there's something behind that. We know that beyond this world is a world we want, as the Course says. So.
Exactly. And yeah. the problem with that beyond this world is the world I want, is that I don't have any way of imagining what that is. And, right. And so I don't have the, there's no graphic for it, this is why we make up all these stories about heaven and what it's like, and everybody has their, my pleasure of this world, infinite and abundant, forever and ever. They're thinking that's what heaven would be. And so, and also, a lot of people are thinking that heaven is all the pleasures of this world I don't get to have anymore, you know, because I won't get to drink my beer, which there's a song called In Heaven There Is No Beer. I won't get to, you know, watch my Broncos on the TV or whatever. You know, I'll be up there, you know, playing a harp and singing. And that's pretty boring. So all the images that we have of what perfect peace is or what heaven is are based on a very flawed picture of, you know, something that we think we want.
Right. And it's based on comparative logic, isn't it? And it's all about comparing one dream to another, one illusion to another, and thinking, well, this illusion's got to be better, forgetting, you know, completely in those moments that no illusion has ever made us happy. Nothing in the dream has ever truly satisfied us. And that if we don't look at the misery of the ego thought system objectively and honestly, we're not going to choose against it. And that's why, you know, in some cases people will say, well, see, if you're having a great life in this world, you're probably not drawn to the course and you're probably not listening to this conversation.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Because you've convinced yourself that there's something left in the world. And I think sometimes it takes, you know, a few hard knocks or a few dark nights of the soul or something to look at that and to come to the conclusion that there must be a real alternative. But we don't even want to look for that as long as we are convinced that there's something in this world that's going to do it for us.
Right.
And something that's comparative to something else. And that's the ego's ruse and hoax and scam that we, you know, keep reinvesting in every time that we think, oh, well, yeah, I get this core stuff, but I got a lot of stuff I need to do today. And I'm raising my hand high in the air because I do that very frequently. And I suspect there may be other people listening right now that, you know, whether live or if they listen to the recording of this, that are going to say the same thing. You know, it's like, well, sure, we do that a lot because, you know, we've put a lot of time and effort into this incredibly, you know, photorealistic production. This movie that we've made and are appear to be living in has a tremendous production value. It has planets, it has galaxies and solar systems, it has all the way down to an atomic level of detail. I mean, what screenwriter goes to that lengths to hide from unconscious guilt, right? Well, tag, we're it.
Yes, and that's this question that you've pulled up. Really, I think it really brings about a lot of what we're talking about. So
yes,
you want
to
go ahead and start reading this?
Sure. I'll read the question very quickly because it's
kind of
five
long
paragraphs. But yeah, it's sort of longer than most, but I'll just jump right in. This is from facimoutreach.org, the Q&A section. And this is number 1065, if anybody wants to read along with us. And you can find that fairly quickly on the web.
I'm going to put it in the room.
Yeah. And it starts out with this question, number 1065. I started working really hard on myself spiritually about 20 years ago, using the Course for the last 10 years. I thought that the fact that my life had evolved from one of extreme difficulty, pain, and hardship to one very much improved signified I was on the right track. Oh, there we go again. Looking for external validation, right? All that ended when I lost the one really good job I've ever had due to a downsizing 6 years ago. Well, I actually, for me, it was 12 years ago. I could almost make a completely identical statement. Since then, I've had three very long periods of unemployment in between two horrible jobs that were also eliminated. Yeah, I think there might be a few people who could relate to that. These past 6 years have been a real, quote, dark night of the soul, unquote, for me. And I have faced some even deeper and more horrifying things about myself than I had realized were there. Boy, isn't that familiar, huh? My guilt seems so vast and my ego seems to be especially vicious. Despite my attempts to have a relationship with Jesus, I feel that I receive no help from him or from anyone else. I'm laughing only because I think that if we're looking for help in the world, if we want, you know, a dream repair technician mentor, you know, it sometimes gets a little quiet, right?
Well, okay, can I just throw something in here?
Oh, please do.
About
please
that,
do.
Because this is where people are saying, well, yeah, the Holy Spirit gave me a parking place. The Holy Spirit got me a new job. The Holy Spirit, right. You know, here's where we're assigning blame. Because if the Holy Spirit didn't give me a new job or didn't give me a, this is where I'm thinking that, you know, God let me down. You got to recognize that that is absolutely the opposite of what really is happening here. Nothing is changing in the script. And right. so, you know, obviously this person thought they were going to change the script by studying the course. And that is not the way it works. But anyway, go on. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and that's a great point, Lynn, and that's what we all do. I think that's the whole idea behind this question and answer is that we all do that way more often than we realize. And to look at that and to see how invested we are is, I think, really helpful information, as Ken would say. You know, it's really useful to look at that. Okay, when I realized that I shouldn't expect to see any outward manifestations of my spiritual efforts, well, there's a little light bulb moment, right? I do need to be able to support myself financially. I would give anything to understand what had happened inside myself to suddenly change my circumstances. I feel that I have been doing everything I possibly can to help myself, but I feel as though I'm at the mercy of something I have no control over. Well, as a separate self, we all are, right? What does it take to put an end to the to extreme circumstances caused by, in parentheses, what I'm guessing to be, an ego investment in victimhood and martyrdom? I feel that I, in quotes, am not choosing these situations for myself, yet I'm forced to deal with the consequences. Is it really enough to say, quote, oh, that's just my ego acting up and causing trouble, unquote, and then just do whatever I can to feel at peace? Please tell me specifically, step by step, what my thought should be. And then the last part of the question is, another short paragraph, is there any validity to the idea that feelings of worthlessness are broadcast to the universe as an invitation for mistreatment in order to intensify guilt?
Holy cow.
Whoa.
Land of confusion here.
Well, yeah, but that's, you know, that's the paranoid logic of the ego, is that, you know, we think everything in the world is out to get us. And because on the level of the insanity of the ego's completely consistent but completely insane thought system, that seems to be the case, doesn't it? Okay, what concept, idea, or lesson from the course could I focus on to make the biggest difference to me right now? How do I convince myself that Jesus does care, even when I see no reason to believe he does or to have faith in him? Whoa, quite a question, huh? And then there's quite an answer too. There's about seven paragraphs here. So do you want to read the first one, the answer that is given at the facim.org website?
Yes, I will.
Thank you.
All right, so here we go. There really can be no satisfactory answer at this level to explain why each of our lives plays out in the specific form that it does. And so to look for specific causes in our thoughts, such as, quote, the ego's investment in victimhood, martyrdom, unquote, only serves to reinforce our feelings of guilt, as you are experiencing. The Course has no prescription for changing our life circumstances. Rather, it offers a different way of perceiving or interpreting the events of our lives, whatever they may be, which will allow us to be increasingly peaceful and eventually to disidentify with the self we have believed we are. As Jesus says early in the text, quote, how else can you find joy in a joyless place except by realizing that you are not there? And that's in chapter 6, section 2, 6:1. Oh, okay, that's, what is it? The
sixth paragraph and first
I'm thinking, is that the lessons of the Holy Spirit?
Oh, I'd have to look up the
okay.
section.
But, anyway, go
ahead. Yeah. Yeah, and that last quote, by the way, is the title of an entire Academy class that was given by Jeffrey Siebert and Rosemary Lasasso a couple of months ago. That was excellent, by the way. They're recording these, and I'm hoping that at some point they will release them. But if you want to get hooked into these Academy classes, just go to facim.org and sign up for their bulletins. And then if you look at the Temecula schedule, I from a usability standpoint, I think they really should have something that says, you know, classes and workshops. But right now it just says Temecula schedule, probably from historical basis, because that's where they've had them for years. But now they're offering them online. And these workshops are just wonderful. This last one that I attended a couple of weeks ago was a 2-day one, more brilliant stuff. And they're just doing a great job. They're really picking up where Ken Wapnick left off and taking it and running with it. But not in the way Ken would say it, but in terms of the form, but in terms of the content, it's just right on stuff. And
I'm sorry. Go on. Excuse me.
Oh, okay. So anyway, yeah, and also remembering that there's another retreat that's happening in Colorado this year. And this is about a month and a week or so before the one at Estes Park. And if for people that are interested, there's also a retreat by Lynn Corona and Tim Wise in Colorado Springs. So if you're on the south end of Denver and have time available the May 1st through the 4th, you can go to sfacim.org, which expands out to schoolforacourseofmiracles.org, and you can read about that retreat happening May 1st through the 4th. And Lynn and Tim are also wonderful course teachers, and I have nothing but good things to say about them. And they're doing a series of these, and this is I think the second or third of the ones of this type that they've done at this retreat location. And so people can avail themselves of that. And one more resource while I'm sharing things that I think is really a wonderful resource is Susan Dugan's blog, which is forays in forgiveness.com. And about roughly once a week, she posts a really good article there. Just a lot of great resources online. And then, of course, the Foundation for Inner Peace website, which I happen to be revamping along with a whole bunch of help from a lot of great folks, which is acim.org. So you got the two main sister organizations, facim.org and acim.org, and there's tons of other great stuff online and more happening all the time. So anyway, so
quick, I was going to ask before we went on, then about these academy courses that are online, as far as cost, are they pretty, Are they? I know they've always kept their classes as cheap as they could.
They're very reasonable. So I mean, if you compare, well, the one I just attended was 2 days, which is they have four 1-hour sessions the first day and the same schedule the next day. So it's about 8 hours, which is a lot of intensive focused material on the course and totally in line with the non-dual teachings and the heart and head, so to speak, of Ken's message. And there's not too many places where you can attend either live or remotely at the workshop for that little, and it does help fund the foundation. So if people are the least bit interested in those academy classes and the other smaller day-long programs that they have, I highly recommend them. A year ago, their technical issues were pretty significant, and the quality of the content was great, but now they've got the technical bugs sorted out, and it's essentially flawless in terms of the delivery. If you've got a computer with a decent internet connection, you can watch the streaming video and be, it's just like being in the room other than not being able to raise your hand. and they make the replays available for several weeks too. So I'm on my third listening and viewing of these, and I'll wrap that up this weekend of listening to those because I get more out of it each time. So essentially I've had, three full days, if you count the actual hours of attending this, and getting more and more out of each listening/viewing. So yeah, highly, highly recommend it. They're just really wonderful.
That's great. Cause I know that I've been, gone to see Ken and then wished I had replays because you don't remember anything he says after you leave.
Sure.
You walk out and it's like, he says this happens. It's like the oblivion just like right over you.
Well, that's it. I think that's the whole principle of why it's so important, and why Gary and Cindy's teachers, Art Napersa, suggest that, the reinforcement and repetition is a good thing because our ego stronghold on the mind, we've taken how many lifetimes to develop a fixation with and an identification with a role, of a puppet you know, of a incredibly sophisticated holographic meat puppet that we call a body that is merely a shadow of a fragmented thought system. And but we've spent lifetimes developing our identification with that. So why wouldn't we, you know, not give ourselves some slack and be patient with ourselves as we slowly but surely undo that by the forgiveness classroom that we've given ourselves? And so the repetition, I think, is really helpful. And going to workshops like the one in Estes Parks and the one in Colorado Springs that Lynn and Tim are doing, and attending the FACIM online workshops, if you happen to be in Temecula, California, you know, in person, which is a great experience, I recommend also. There's just a lot of things that we can do, not just those specific events, but just use everything in our lives as a reminder, as a mnemonic device, and train our minds to see, you know, like those early workbook lessons say, you know, the paperclip in my hand, or the phone on my desk, or the painting on the wall. You know, they can all be symbolic reminders of there's two thought systems, and I get to choose which one any minute now, you know, moment to moment. Yeah,
exactly.
Every minute.
You have to, in fact, if you are, that's the thing, you have to recognize that you are actually choosing at every moment. So you need to be aware of the choice.
Exactly.
And that's really the difficulty. It's becoming aware of my behavior, becoming aware of my thoughts, and becoming aware of my choices. When I am aware of these things, then I can look at them rationally and say, yeah, you know, that was dumb. Or this.
But not with any condemnation. I think that's important. Such an important thing to remember, that when we see how silly and dumb it is, it's not a punitive, it's not a condemning observation. It's just like this incredibly vast spirit that we all are and I am part of had an aha moment where it realized it was investing in a puppet on, you know, on the stage, or you know, a bunch of photons on the light of the screen of my monitor, or you know, if we go to a theater, the light hitting the silver screen, you know, and it's a stage production. It's just a hologram, you know, of vast proportions that it seems photorealistic, so we've bought into it.
Well, and the thing too to remember about all that. Excuse me, we made it, but we made it from our, obviously, it was made with a lack of love. That's what the Course tells us.
Right,
but we
right.
still have the infinite power of the Holy Son of God to make this amazing hologram that appears so very real with very few glitches. And what this course does is it leads you to question the fabric of the hologram. And then as you begin to question it, you begin to see the glitches, because right. there are glitches, and there are lots and lots and lots of glitches. So mm-hmm. as you begin to see, hey, wait a minute, this is not what I thought it was. As you begin to see that more and more and more, it becomes clearer to you that it is just a dream. It really is not the solid thing that you think it is. And right. it's the questioning. Always it's the questioning and the thought in your mind that I do not know what anything is for.
Yes, yes, yes. And that questioning, looking at the discomfort and the suffering that we have, and the thoughts that don't bring us peace, is how we use those glitches, because that wasn't supposed to be what happened when we you know, thought we branched off on our own and took ego's fragmented insane course to heart. So when we look at the results that we're getting and say, no, this is not effective as directed, we can realize that we've been getting the wrong direction, and we can follow the different playwright's inner script. You know, the outer script is already written, but the inner script of how we choose to think and feel about what seems to be happening on the screen of our mind is totally up to us. And that's the one freedom we really have, but it's the one important one. Should we go back and see if we can finish reading the rest of the
FAQ? Yeah, you want to read the next paragraph, or you want me to?
Okay. Why don't you read the second one?
Okay, so you are right. Okay, so we just asked the question, Jesus asked the question, which we ask, how can you find joy in a joyless place except by realizing that you are not there? And yeah, that is from the Lessons of the Holy Spirit. This is what the Holy Spirit is teaching us, is to recognize that we're not really here and that we didn't find love in a hopeless place. We've actually found we found a little hope in a place that we thought was hopeless, by realizing that we are not here. It's not really happening, and it never did happen. And that is the true basis for forgiveness. And if you recognize that's the true basis for forgiveness, then you're going to look for that over and over and over. Or that's my experience anyway, and see it everything.
Yes.
So you are right. Oh, did you want to say something?
No, that you said it very nicely.
Okay. You are right. The self you believe you are is not making the decisions about what will happen in your life. While there may at times seem to be some correlation between our conscious thoughts and our external circumstances, which a lot of that people get, I found a penny, it means I have good luck. the correspondence is by no means consistent nor predictable. And believing that there should be some congruence as you thought when your situation seemed to be getting better and as you integrated various spiritual teachings into your life can be a real ego setup, as you then found out. We are not victims of some powerful mind over which we have no control. It's just that because of our own fear of responsibility for the ego, the part of our mind that is making choices is usually out of conscious awareness for most of us, other than for the briefest instant. And that there's a quote here from Lesson 136, and it is, or not a quote, it just points us to that. I'll have to go and look. And it is unlikely that we will understand all of what is involved in determining our specific experiences as bodies in the world, nor is it necessary. Okay, it's,
bingo.
Yeah, it's just stop thinking you need to figure it out. You can't figure it out. It ain't going to be figured out. Not necessary. Just forget about it.
Part of the development trust, huh?
Yeah, exactly. So judging ourselves and laying a guilt trip on ourselves for what we judge to be our difficult life circumstances is both misguided and counterproductive, and I might also say very mean and very hurtful.
Yeah, it is. It is, and it hurts everyone because there's only one of us here.
Exactly. And so, what is he? You should stop doing it right now. Just stop.
Bob Newhart's prescription: just stop it. Right.
Stop it.
Yeah, totally. Shall I read the next one?
Go ahead.
Okay. The notion that our feelings of worthlessness invite mistreatment from the universe may be part of other spiritual teachings, but not the Course. The Course would say that we believe that guilt calls for punishment. And there's a reference to chapter 26, section 7, paragraph 3. And so we seek to suffer in order to atone for our sinfulness, but the suffering is always simply the result of a choice for separation in the mind, and not the consequence of anything external. In other words, a mind identified with guilt will interpret an external event or situation as punitive, while a healed mind will not identify with guilt, will see nothing punitive about the same external circumstance. Big difference. And because we don't see it as punitive, I'll just a quick aside, we won't then use it as a justification for martyrdom, nor for lashing out against the seeming others that may be part of that script. These alternative ways of viewing the same event are clearly contrasted in Jesus' discussion of the crucifixion, in which he referred to chapter 6, section 1. And so it is most helpful to think of guilt as dictating our interpretation of what seems to be happening to us in the world, rather than as dictating what the events themselves shall be at an individual level. Do you want to read the next one?
Sure. And so basically what he's suggesting here is that we think we're getting what we deserve. And again, because we think we're guilty. And so we're going to blame ourselves or blame the world or blame somebody for our circumstances. And when you develop this alternative way of viewing it and kind of above the battleground, then you actually can see it more for what it is, more for the nothing that it really is. And I like that he brought in the Jesus crucifixion because the discussion of Jesus crucifixion is all about, you know, what the viewpoint that he had compared to the viewpoint that we had. And, mm-hmm. you know, he obviously didn't see anything was going wrong, didn't experience upset, suffering, or pain, because the physical body that appeared to be being crucified didn't even really exist and was just a projection, which he does explain to us in the Manual for Teachers, that he actually manifested, projected the body, which we're all doing, but he did it on a conscious level so that he could communicate with us. And mm-hmm. that teachers can do that. You can reach a point where that's not only a possibility, but it's your only experience.
And I think we get glimpses of that in those little holy instance miracle moments, as a course might describe them, where we suspend condemnation, where it's not like it says it's not about not seeing bodies, but it's about wanting to see our brother sinless, wanting to see each other as completely in truth innocent of any cosmic crime. And that is so freeing. That basically liberates us to then have an infinite compassion and patience with ourselves and the seeming others in our lives. And that's when we really become, you know, the teachers of God that the Course talks about, because we're basically saying the ego's thought system doesn't cut it. And all I have to do is get the heck out of the way of that investment and you know, stop funding that with my thoughts, so to speak. And what magically, but not really magic, it's undoing of the magic, really. But, you know, miraculously, I'm off the hook. And so is everyone else at that moment, because we're, you know, thoughts, you know, share the same source, and ideas never leave their source in the mind. Yeah.
So it's, Cheryl is asking in the room, so the question is, how do you recognize the difference? And I'm not sure what we were talking about at the time when she wrote it. I just noticed it. But I'm thinking for me, to recognize the difference is to actually just know that none of it is real. Right. And none of it is my fault. None of it is your fault. There is no fault in any of it, unless you want to just say the whole illusion is the fault of, you know, our decision to make a tiny mad idea and make it real. That's the only thing that actually could possibly conceivably have gone wrong, was that we believed something that was not true. And so everything, there is no difference. There is not a single thing in this world that I'm responsible for, and there is not a single thing in this world that has any effect over me. And so you may rationally say, well, that doesn't make sense, because, you know, if you get a cold or you get sick or you die or, you know, you starve or lose your job like this guy did or whatever, you know, then that's going to affect you. It doesn't affect me. It affects the life of Lynn. And the life of Lynn is already written in a script. You know, it's predictable. I used to think this long before I knew the course, that everything that's happening is completely out of our control, because it was all begun and it's just moving. Like, it's like the river, you know, it's just moving along. Mm-hmm. And, you know, either I get in it and say, oh, I don't like the way this river's flowing, let me try to make it go somewhere else. Or
that's a good metaphor.
You get in and say, let's see where it's going. You know, I'm interested to see where I end up when I'm floating down this river. So it really is. It just changes everything. Everything, the way that you experience your life then. Because now you experience, and this is how I'm experiencing so much more, that, you know, my life is, you know, it's just evolving around me. And I am not involved in it other than, as, you know, I'm playing my part. I'm doing what comes, and I'm knowing that I'm not responsible for anything past, present, or future that goes on in a script.
Exactly. We're not the victims of the world we see.
Exactly.
Shall I finish the next paragraph
or so?
Yeah. Having said this, your external circumstances nevertheless can be used by the Holy Spirit if you allow yourself to see not the externals themselves, but your reactions to them as expressions of your identification with the ego in your mind, which is the one thing you have a real choice about. What is most challenging and difficult about this process for most of us is that the outer situation may not change, and most of us want to see, quote, positive, unquote, change in our lives as proof we are healing our mind. But the Course's purpose is to lead us to an ever-deepening experience of peace, no matter what may seem to be happening to our bodies. There's a lot of that paragraph, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Because we're so invested in the outcome, you know, and our systematic level confusion that says that there's something in the world that's going to help me, is going to make me happy, and as a result, we're pretty invested.
Yeah.
Want to read the next one?
Well, yeah, and the hoping for a different outcome is exactly what Einstein, I believe, or is in any way quoted here, as being the definition of insanity.
Yeah.
You know, you're doing the same thing over and over and again, and you're expecting a different outcome. And, you know, you think that, well, now if I just change the way that I think about it, and I do the lessons every day, and blah, 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 all these things, that it's going to change the outcome. It's not going to change the outcome. The outcome was already written by an insane thought and is still running out. And so, you know, now, so the circumstances of your life are not going to change because of the healing of your mind. You are, however, going to have a much different experience because of the healing of the mind. You know, it's like if, you know, you the old saying, and I thought it was in the Course, but apparently it's not, that pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional. That's really what happens. You know, losing your job, that's going to happen because that's the way the script is written. Other people can't play their parts if you don't work your part out. You know, if we all just started disappearing from the script as soon as, you know, our mind was healed, there'd be a lot of strange things happening in vacuums in the, people would be disappearing like State Farm agents. So, it doesn't work.
I guess we don't need to worry about, you know, the poof factor, as Ken would talk about it. You know, that we're not going to just disappear and go poof probably anytime soon. But so on a practical level, if we can just look at the amount of peace that the forgiveness process provides us, that gives us a tremendous anchor to keep us motivated to stay with this program and the Holy Spirit's program. That is not Lynn's or Bruce's, and that I think that's why it's really important that we need to develop that trust in our inner kindness teacher, whatever label we want to use, whether it's the Jesus of the Course or the Holy Spirit, whatever label works for you, because as you were talking about a moment ago, Lynn, that the you know just changing our thoughts within the ego's thought system, or to use it, you know, like you mentioned, Einstein's quote is at the same level of thinking that the problem was made is not going to get us out of it, because we have to be above the battleground metaphorically. We have to choose against ego's entire thought system and make one real choice, which is what the last paragraph in this FAQ suggests. That's really the only thing that's going to get us out of the dream.
So exactly.
How about if I read the next one?
Okay. And just one point is that my opinion of what is never made it what it was.
Right.
So my opinion changing doesn't change what it, you know, I mean, it just, yeah.
Kind of like trying to change the river or, you know, stop the world I want to get off. You know, it's we're not going to do that on the level of form. We're going to do that by switching thought systems entirely. And that's what the Course is leading us to do.
Exactly. So go ahead.
Okay. As for the vastness of your guilt, that is your perception simply because you're looking at the guilt with your ego, which must see it as huge and serious in order to maintain its own existence in your mind. The ego cannot tolerate your considering it as insignificant or silly. Feathers ruffled on ego thought system. And that specifically is what Jesus can help you with. If you're looking to help him, if you're looking to him to help you get your life back on track, you will be sorely disappointed in the long run. But, you know, life as we think of it anyway. But if you're looking to him to help remind you that your guilt is not real and that you already have what you need to be happy in your mind, you're just blocking from your awareness. He's always ready to help. You just have to ask. Big difference, huh? The real difference.
It's the only difference.
Yeah.
So this vast guilt that that we don't recognize, that really is the culprit, mea culpa, every time. And so just looking, this has been a practice that I've been doing for a while, and it really is incredibly helpful. Anytime I feel even the least bit of an upset, anytime I feel even the least bit of uncomfortable, something uncomfortable, I immediately, well, not always immediately, but I'm trying to immediately look to, where's the guilt in this? Mm-hmm. Where am I experiencing guilt in this situation that is making me feel uncomfortable? And, you know, it could be the guilt because, you know, I burned the soup. How do you burn soup? Well, maybe I did. Who knows? I burned the toast, or I forgot to vacuum the library, or, you know, or whatever. It could be just some tiny little thing. It's just some tiny little thing that is perceived by me as being a miscue, an upset, something I did wrong, or really basically it's always I'm thinking I messed up in some way. So looking for that guilt immediately, you begin to see the source of the disturbance in your mind, and then you recognize that the thing you were blaming is completely innocent or neutral and has absolutely nothing to do with any of it. My job, my chair, my dog barking outside. I'm sitting here thinking, you know, my dog is outside. Well, it's like 70 degrees outside, you know, but he's barking, you know, and the neighbors are going to be upset because my dog is barking. All these things, you know, any little bit of discomfort that you feel, you always can look to see where you're blaming yourself for having not done something or having done something. And when you see that, it's really easy to just laugh at it and let it go. Mm-hmm. Even though you may do it over and over and over.
Our Groundhog Day story.
Yeah. You can still do it. So so did you read the specific steps?
That's the last two we have to cover.
Okay, so I'm good.
Do we have a minute or two to go over?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. We're doing a meditation after this, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
We can go over.
Okay. And those were good examples too. The everyday stuff that crosses our mind is exactly the fodder that we need to in our forgiveness classroom to just gently, but steadily, like you say, shorten the gap of time between when those specific guilt induced thoughts arise and then when we recognize them as being motivated by that, and then just say to ourselves, that had no effect on reality. That not a single note in Heaven's Song was missed. Or in other words, our peace doesn't have to be affected by what seems to be happening outside of us. And that placid, truly eternally peaceful interior mental landscape is available to us 24/7, 365. But we only realize that when we, you know, after extended practice in letting go of our investment in the guilt. And we don't have to know all the details and all the specifics. We just, like you say, Lynn, just have to say, even the word guilt, you know, doesn't have to cross our mind. It's just to realize, I have chosen a thought that doesn't serve me. And I can choose with my decision-making faculty in my mind to let it go. And that's, you know, the real alternative that the last paragraph in this FAQ talks about. And I think that's what the course keeps redirecting us toward.
Exactly. So I'll go ahead and read because this is the crux here is the specific steps.
Yep.
And so the specific steps you ask for would be to first acknowledge whenever anything in your life circumstances seems to be upsetting you, that the real problem is that you have chosen the ego as your teacher to help you interpret what seems to be happening to you. And the ego's only teaching goal is to reinforce the buried guilt in your mind by viewing the situation as a punishment for that guilt. So the first step is just recognizing, hey, this is a dumb mistake.
Mm-hmm. That's the reveal and the recognize step in the three R's, as I like to call them, the reveal, release, replace, forgiveness process.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So the next step is to recognize that if the ego is a choice, there must be an alternative teacher available in your mind and see its insignificance. When you are willing... Jesus is simply waiting for your invitation.
Yes.
His purpose will not be to change the external situation, but to help you look at the guilt you have made real in your own mind and see its insignificance. So so that's it. You just look at the guilt with Jesus. And you can, you know, however you want to do that. You don't have to go to Jesus. You go to the Holy Spirit. You could go to Buddha. You could go to, you know, your imaginary friend from childhood and say, you know, help me see this.
Exactly. And it's a gentle inner presence, isn't it? It doesn't have to have a name or a label, but just a peaceful awareness that we know we have available to us all the time that we can turn to. And in moments of sanity, say, I could see peace instead of this. And again, we don't have to, you know, analyze the hell out of the specifics of the deep ontological guilt and all that. That's not necessary. I mean, at some point we start to realize that that's the core idea behind it. But all we have to do is just say, this doesn't feel right. I'm not happy with this. I can choose peace instead of this. And I can see the possibility that this same situation could be going on, but I could be at peace, regardless of what the particulars are seeming to happen around me.
Exactly. And really, it's the seeing the insignificance of it, that
right.
To see that really, I'm the one who gave it all the meaning it has for me. Again.
Yep. And not only the insignificance, but also the ineffectiveness that gives us the motivation to release it, which is the second R in the three R's. Because when we see that it's insignificant and ineffective, it's like, well, why would I want to hang on to that? And in those same moments, it's super easy to release because, you know, then we're saying that it's not working for us. So why would I beat myself up? Because I think that really puts us in touch with our true innocence. And the true kindness that we have for ourselves, then is the motivation. We change the motivation by changing thought system. And if we're no longer motivated for masochism and self-abuse, then we'll drop it. We'll just say, okay, that's not working. I'm out of here.
Right.
I'm dropping that thought system.
And you get reinforced by that because it feels good.
Exactly.
You recognize, oh, wow, you know, suddenly I feel looser, happier, more joyful. And that's a reinforcement to keep doing it over and over. But you have to do it a few times, really, to get the idea that it's always going to work. It's always going to work. And that's such an incredible thing. And it may take a little while to work sometimes because sometimes my resistance is really high, but I can't feel guilty about that resistance either because I know it's the nature of the ego. That's the way the ego works, is that, you know, it's going to fight and resist and fight and resist. But to recognize that, you know, that's not even my real thoughts. And when you start seeing, as I have really started seeing, how many of, well, in fact, all of these thoughts are not originated from me. They're not something I sat and contemplated or imagined or anything. These are thoughts that just came into my mind and I chose, oh, I'm going to grab that one. That makes sense to me. And I followed it and stood with it. And it wasn't wrong. It was just a silly mistake. And I can choose again over and over and over. And that is really what happens. So the third, let's see. the next step to recognize that there's an alternative teacher and Jesus or whoever is waiting. So his purpose is not to change the external situation, but to help you look at the guilt you have made in your own mind and see its insignificance. When you are willing to join with him, this is what he will help you see, or rather not see. Then, when you look back at the external situation, you will no longer be looking at it through the lens of guilt, and you will no longer need to see it as punitive. And what is called for is not faith in Jesus, that he will help you, but faith in your own power of choice, that you will be willing to look at the guilt you have made real in your own mind and then ask for the help to see through it and beyond it to the love that is always there.
Bingo.
And that's it. It's that willingness to look at the guilt in my own mind. And oh my God, you know, when I started seeing it, talk about, you know, I think about Pandora's box. And if you look on my Paltalk, my image that I have on there is Pandora opening the box, because
cool.
Because really, that's what you're doing. You're looking, not just, you know, opening the box to let them all out. You're opening the box to look and see how many of them there are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the whole fabric of my life has been built on guilt upon guilt upon guilt upon guilt. And of course, it's no wonder that I see things in the way that, you know, it seems so negative and upsetting, because how could you help it when everything you see is based on a guilty thought? Or guilty thoughts upon guilty thoughts. So really looking at those, and, you know, honest to God, you know, you're driving down the road, you see a homeless person at the side of the road, you feel guilty. You know, why am I responsible for his homelessness? No, but I have a home and he doesn't. That's not fair. I feel guilty. Or, you know, I think he's a bum, and now I feel guilty because I've judged against my brother in a way that is negative. Or, you know, just try to look at those thoughts. You'll be amazed at how many of them you have, and how many of them are accusing and denying and all the things that you, if you think you're in control of your own mind and you start seeing the mechanisms of thought, you're going to be kind of shocked at how really insane you really are.
Well, and the insanity comes from the investment in the form instead of the content in the mind. And that's why when we, you know, like you say, you look at a homeless person, or you see someone that seems to have more or less in the world, it's because we're so invested and fixated on the idea that the specific situation that we think of as a Bruce or a Lynn or, you know, whoever's listening, you know, is the criteria by which to judge anything. It's just nuts. It's nuts, and that it's so ephemeral, and so fleeting, and so temporary. But we're so myopically drilled down in, you know, down through the rabbit hole into the vast illusion of time, into this tiny little fragment that of a dream, let alone not even reality, but we're fixated on a fragment of a dream, that we don't even see, you know, the vastness of time, which in and of itself is an illusion, let alone space and all the other, you know, aspects of ego's, you know, default misinterpretation of things. So
absolutely. Yeah. So then the last little thing he says, you may find this section in the text, the real alternative, in text chapter 7 or chapter 31, section 4, a helpful one for reflecting on the issues that you are confronting in a very clear and direct language. Jesus addresses the futility of looking for any answers in the world, but also reminds us of where the happiness we are looking for can truly be found.
And that's one of my all-time favorite sections in the text, and we could easily spend an hour talking just about that section if you want to do that at some point, Lynn. I love talking about the real alternative because I think that's just, there's so much in that section, and it really reinforces what we've talked about this morning already, and how helpful it is to see that there's nothing in the world that's going to do it for us. But we need to, you know, each reach that conclusion on our own, at our own pace, and we all do it over typically a large amount of time, and to be patient with ourselves and be gentle with ourselves, and recognize that, you know, the restoring that innocence and that peace and that complete inclusive perspective on things is not done overnight, because we've taken countless lifetimes to invest in it. We have to give ourselves plenty of slack and patience to uninvest that, and that's where our forgiveness classroom typically takes, you know, a long time and a lot of patience.
But it's not going to take countless lifetimes. And
not
that's
necessarily, no.
The
no,
purpose of
no.
this course is to bring exactly. us to the place where we recognize and become more yep. and more and more acutely aware of it.
Right.
That you can actually do it now. Heaven is here and now.
Exactly.
It's just a point of view. And so
yep.
Really it is just about turning around and becoming and seeing things differently. And it's not a 360. Some people say, well, they made a complete 360 degree turn. Well, that means they came back to where they were. It really is kind of a 180.
Yeah, that's an interesting phrase that's used. It's kind of even technically a little incorrectly, but the whole idea is of turning implies that there's direction, and ultimately this course is a non-dual course, and so spinning around, you know, from illusion, you know, it's like on a merry-go-round of you know, looking at all the different options that the ego offers, whether it's 180 or 360, you know, illusion A equals illusion B equals illusion C, and they're all equal illusory. But the real alternative is basically, you know, it's metaphorically on a vertical axis of choosing a whole thought system that's above the battleground altogether. And then we look down and see the insanity of all of ego's seemingly different alternatives that are really the same.
Exactly.
And all bad investments.
They're all
just
bad.
A bad.
They're all bad.
or to paraphrase Alex Marchand, a turd by any other name would smell as bad.
That's right. That's
that?
Right.
it's all just turd polishing and gilding poop that you know, the ego tries to do to make it seem more palatable.
Exactly. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Lynn. That's kind of a strange note to end on, but I don't
know. That's what Cheryl Valentine used to say. You don't put whipped cream on dog shit.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Well, ego certainly does try in countless ways to glamorize our mental ghetto or our psychological dumpster that it's made for us. Huh?
Exactly. So thank you so much, Bruce. And
thank
I really
you,
enjoyed this. And thank you also for your help with the calendar. I'll tell you what, if you go sure. to the website now and look at our schedule, I haven't got it perfected yet. And I still haven't done all the things that we were talking about doing. But if you go there and look, if you click on the week or the agenda is really where you're going to see the blow-by-blow, what's going on in here. But it is so much easier for me to keep up than the calendar that we had before. So,
oh, cool. Is that the sanctuary schedule page?
The sanctuary schedule, yes.
Yeah, okay, great.
Yeah, go check it out and see just how much more efficient it is. And so I'm going to also be able to post things, future events in there. Which is really cool because you can go month by month into years, actually. But to let you know,
nice.
We're going to be having some mini series here that are going to be on Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. And we're having our first one starts in March with Martha Creek. I don't know if you know of her, but she's a teacher and she teaches, does the work, Byron Katie work. So... you know, we're looking for people to do, you know, four or three or four or six or whatever Sundays in a row, mini series of teaching. So you know, if you got any thoughts of people who might be good to do that, let me know. I've already thought of a few while talking with you this morning, including Lynn Corona and Susan Dugan and Bruce Rawls. So, so anyway, just thank you so much again for your help.
Thank you, Lynn. I really appreciate you, all your efforts and wonderful complimentary commentary. So,
very good. All right. Well, Bruce Rawls, I'm going to let you go. And we've gone over about 15 minutes. So we're going to have about 15 minutes of meditation here. thank you so much, Bruce. And I love you, brother. And I will see you when I see you. There's Ken Mallory in the room. So bye-bye, Bruce.
Have a great week, all.
Bye-bye.